a basic fault line in the religious secular divide can be traced regarding the Yontif of Chanukah. A firm person, a religious person, thinks in terms of the miracles of Chanukah, thinks in terms of Chanukah as a deed of God, a deed of Hashem. In marked contrast, a secular person, secular Jewish historians and the like, tend to glorify the heroism of the Maccabees, the Hashmonaim themselves, and speak of the heroism, the courage, the prowess, the strategy of these great warriors. And this inspires, of course, the Israeli sports teams, the Tel Aviv Maccabiah, the Yerushalayim Maccabiah, Maccabiah Netanya. And I would like to provocatively suggest tonight that there need not be a disagreement here. And more personally, as a front person, I am not threatened at all by the glorification of the Hashmonaim as great warriors. That actually Chanukah is a model for us that miracles from Hashem, on one hand, and heroic deeds of man on the other, need not contradict each other. It's a farce that we either have faith or human intervention, what some might call bitachon versus hishtavlus. We need both. We need both. And this is what Chanukah teaches us, great miracles of Hashem, side by side with great deeds of man. And let's see if we could develop this tonight and make a beauty. Indeed, Chanukah is markedly different from the standard biblical miracles. The miracles in the Tanakh, certainly the Chumash, are generally deeds of God. And the people really can just stand back or sit back. Perhaps this is most evident at the Yom Suf, when Moshe says, Jewish people, Hisiatzavu Ura'u as Yeshuas Hashem. You just stand back and see the deed of Hashem. This is not for you to sweat about. It's Hashem's deed. Well, the miracle of Chanukah was all about heroic deeds of man. The Hashmonaim put their life on the line, they fought, they strategized, and then lo and behold, a miracle happened. Mark a distinction, a provocative distinction of a different sort of miracle, a miracle precipitated by man. And this notion, strange as it might be, of a miracle precipitated by man, ought not be so foreign and strange. Because I would like to reveal to you a brilliant discovery, a magnificent revelation, of a Gemara which explicitly talks about this sort of miracle. A miracle which is dependent on the deeds of man, such as in Chanukah. Have a look. A well-known Gemara in Brachas, Brachas Daf Chaf, talks about earlier generations who experienced miracles. And it says, Maishna Dorish Rishonim Desrachash Lahunisa. Why were earlier generations different that they merited miracles? And it answers, Inu Masri Nafshayu Akidash Hashem. They had the trait of Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice. Because the earlier generations displayed self-sacrifice for Hashem, they experienced miracles. Now, do you have that light bulb, that epiphany, that spring in your step of excitement now? This Gemara is directly apropos to Chanukah. Because Chanukah is the exemplification of Mesiras Nefesh, where the Hashmonaim and company literally laid their life on the line, made that great sacrifice, were willing to pay that ultimate price, and they experienced miracles. Exactly as the Gemara is telling us. I think this Gemara is bringing into focus for us what Chanukah is all about. Yes, indeed, a miracle, but a miracle which only comes due to the great deeds of man. And the Gemara is identifying for us what sort of great deed of man, Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice. And let's now understand deeper the Gemara's correlation. Why Mesiras Nefesh in particular? Why is it that the attribute of self-sacrifice sparks miracles of any great Jewish attributes? And there's a brilliant insight here to be revealed. Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, is all about breaking beyond boundaries, breaking beyond expectations, doing the extraordinary. Most people are not ready, willing to do certain things, to lay their life on the line, to truly push those beyond that box which contains so many people, creature comforts, whatever it is that restrains people from truly doing great things. The one who exhibits self-sacrifice is breaking out of those boundaries. You see that? He's not, he or she is not stunted by anything, including fear of loss of life or whatever it may be. So because this individual is breaking their natural boundaries, is it not measure for a measure, mita k'neged mita, that Hashem does miracles breaking the boundaries of nature itself? The extraordinariness of man in the form of Mesiras Nefesh precipitates corresponding extraordinariness of Hashem's part. We break the laws of our nature, breaking out of those boundaries, those limits. We surpass those limits which limit most people. Hashem surpasses the limits of nature. You see, it's beautiful, brilliant, this understanding of the Gemara. Now we begin to understand Hanukkah. Yes, indeed. A miracle which can only happen because man takes the lead. God is doing what man does. If we do the supernatural in our realm, Mesiras Nefesh, we do extraordinary, he does extraordinary. It's coming together, this perspective of Hanukkah. And I would go further and suggest that this sort of new form of miracle, in departure from the biblical type of miracles, simply an act of God, but here rather an act of man, which then evokes corresponding divine intervention, can be incorporated into a larger panorama, a broader perspective of Jewish history. Understand that Hanukkah is in fact classified by the Chazal as the first post-biblical miracle. Purim is considered the final biblical miracle. Of course, Megillas Esther is at the end of the canonization of the Tanakh, so Esther marks the end of the era of biblical miracles. And now Hanukkah is in the post-biblical era. And it is quite resonant, it comes together for us, that is the post-biblical era, we need to take charge. You understand? In the biblical era, when we still had Nevuah, we still had open revelation from on high, so of course Hashem takes the lead. But then when the curtain of Nevuah, of the biblical era, falls, and Hashem's presence is not readily apparent, now progress depends upon us. We need to step up to the plate and do great things as the Hashmonam and their followers, their devoted Jewish followers did. And when we step up to the plate, then Hashem reciprocates with miracles, because Hashem never really left. Even after the curtain of the Tanakh has fallen and we've lost the benefit of overt divine revelation, Hashem is still here. He's just in hiding, Hester Panim. So we need to take charge, and then he comes forward. That is exactly what Hanukkah is about, and that is exactly the way we must live in this post-biblical era. We do great things, and then the miracles happen. And even today, when you might not see open miracles, as in the Hanukkah story, the same basic pattern is true. When we do great things, Hashem does unexpected things for us, but the movement has to begin with us because we are in this post-biblical era. And therefore, I will suggest even more provocatively that while the end of the period of prophecy is generally seen as a tragic event, due to the Jewish people's sins, we lost Nevuah, we lost open divine revelation, right? So again, generally, the end of the biblical era, the curtain of the Tanakh era falling, is seen as a tzara, a tragedy. We can reframe it, and of course we love to reframe, that's the buzzword today. We can reframe this new reality of no Nevuah, no biblical era, as actually an opportunity and a positive. Hashem now is empowering the Jewish people. You guys are empowered to step up to the plate and do great things. I can rely on you to do it. It's no more Hisyatvu Ru'as Yeshuas Hashem as in the miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim in the Tanakh which follows. Stand back and I Hashem do it. Now I trust you to do it. This is because it's no longer the era of Torah Shebaksav, but rather the era of Torah Shebaalpeh, where our insights, interpretations, and deeds contour and shape what Torah is today. So it is actually an opportunity, believe it or not, if we frame the supposed tragedy of moving beyond the biblical era to the post-biblical era and study miracles such as the first post-biblical miracle, the miracle of Hanukkah. So I would suggest, well, do I have any source to this effect? Let's trace now a magnificent clue from the Gemara to this perspective that the movement beyond biblical miracles to the miracles such as Hanukkah in the post-biblical era are actually an opportunity rather than a challenge. Take a look. It's right there in a Gemara that can be so easily read over. Well-known Gemara in Yuma, where the Gemara says as follows. We know that the story of Esther, the Purim story, is called the dawn. It's called Shachar. Lamnatzeach ha'ayelz ha'shachar. And the Gemara explains, just like the Shachar, the dawn time, is the end of the night, Esther is the end of the era of biblical miracles. Esther sof kohanisim hanitin likasev. Esther is the final miracle. Purim is the final miracle that merits canonization in the Tanakh. It's the end of a period, just as the dawn is the end of the night. And then we can move beyond dawn into daybreak itself, the post-biblical era. That would be a miracle, says the Gemara, such as Hanukkah, that first miracle, Shaloni Tinli Kosev, that first post-biblical miracle. Now, this Gemara's analogy is astounding. The Gemara seems to view the trajectory of biblical miracles as night. You see that? Esther, the end of the biblical era, is called dawn, Shachar, the end of the night. And the post-biblical era is daybreak. Hanukkah in the post-biblical era is daybreak. That's an astounding analogy. We would have made the opposite connection. We would have argued the period of Tanakh and Nevuah, when we had Gilui Panim, when we had open divine revelation, that would be daybreak, that would be light. And to the contrary, when we don't have that Ha'aras Panim, that radiant illumination of Hashem, we would have thought that's night. But here the Gemara reverses our assumptions, as it so often does. The Gemara sees the biblical period as night. Esther, the Purim story, is the end of the night, is dawn, and now we're moving into the light. We're moving into daybreak in the Hanukkah story and beyond. Why so? Well, now you and I understand exactly why. The Gemara is looking at our reality. Are we active? Are we radiating? Are we bursting with light? In the biblical period, we were pitch black. We weren't radiating forth. We were sitting back, and Hashem is doing the work. Hashem is taking the initiative. It is only post-Torah Shebaksav, as we move now into the era of Torah Shebaalpeh, when the Jewish people take charge, that now we have an era of light. The Jewish people are bursting with the flame of the Jewish people themselves is powerfully bursting forth in the Hanukkah story and beyond. Parenthetically, you will note that our interpretation here of this Gemara, the biblical era as the period of night, and the post-biblical era, the year of Torah Shebaalpeh, beginning with Hanukkah as the daytime, really comes together beautifully when you pick up on the nuances of that Gemara we just studied. Esther, the Purim story, the final miracle of the biblical era is called the dawn, is called the Shachar. Appreciate that dawn, while the end of night is actually a period where the light is beginning to dawn. So I would suggest from our perspective, if light reflects Jewish initiative rather than in the previous biblical era when we were sitting back and Hashem was doing the job. That would mean that in the Esther story, there's a first ray of light. There's a first glimmer of Mesiras Nefesh, as we traced it tonight, of Jews taking charge. And that's, of course, an allusion to Esther. Esther is Moser Nefesh. Esther takes action. Esther risks her life to walk right into the palace and put her life right into the throne room, as she's told not to do, and puts her life in jeopardy. That's a glimmer of light of Mesiras Nefesh, as we trace tonight that Mesiras Nefesh is the human precipitated miracle. Recall the Gemara we studied before. But it's only a glimmer, you understand. Because while Esther took that first step, ultimately, it is left in the hands of Hashem what's going to happen based on Esther's meeting with Ahasuerus. Hashem puts the pieces together and puppeteers the puppet show, which is Megillas Esther. So there's a glimmer of light of Mesiras Nefesh, but it's still the era of night. Still the era where man is not the primal mover. It is only in the daybreak which follows, says the Gemara, beginning with Hanukkah, when we are doing seemingly the whole job. The Hashmonaim fought the battle, beginning to finish. They slayed those Yavanim. They slayed the Seleucid Greeks with their Mesiras Nefesh. Certainly, on the earthly sphere, they did the whole job, seemingly, from beginning to end. We did the job. But of course, left to our own devices, there's no way Rabban would have fallen beyond Ma'atim, Giborim would have fallen beyond Chaloshim. So we see how amidst our deeds, it was, of course, Hashem at work, facilitating and enabling us to achieve success beyond our greatest dreams, but facilitating what was essentially our fight, our battle, our Mesiras Nefesh. Now it is not simply dawn as in the Esther story. Now we have moved to daylight itself. The flame of Jewish initiative, Mesiras Nefesh, is bursting in all of its glory. And how exciting now. Now that we've broke open the Gemara's motif about night and daybreak moving into the Hanukkah year, we begin to appreciate the symbolism of light and the light of the menorah, that light of the menorah is going to correlate to the Gemara's imagery of daybreak, human initiative, that R of the menorah is the idea that we are Meir, we radiate, that we are in fact beginning to appreciate that the major conflict, which so many Sfarim and theologians and people believe is a conflict, the Bitachon versus Hishtadlus conflict, how much faith do you have in Hashem versus how much Hishtadlus, how much initiative do you take? Right? Everyone asks that question. And many believe that this is a question of apportioning a pie. How much of the pie is faith, Bitachon, and how much of the pie is Hishtadlus, is human initiative. Right? And some are under the impression that the more faith you have, the less hishtadlus is necessary. Right? But actually, that's a mistake. As my Rebbe of Nachalansky always says, we believe in 100% bitachon, 100% hishtadlus. Never renege on your responsibility and giving a project in life it's all, your all. A project in life which is appropriate. A project in line with your vision, your avodas Hashem, your success, baruchnius or begashnius, that's going from which you are going to grow in avodas Hashem. Never fall prey to the reneging of responsibility position. Well, I have bitachon in Hashem, so I'm going to apply a half-baked effort. I'm going to study for my college exams only so much. I am going to pursue shidduch networking only so far, and then rely on. No, that's a mistake. That is, you might call it a frumma yetzahara of reneging on responsibility, supposedly claiming I'm a person of faith. No, 100% hishtadlus if this is the right project to be involved in. 100% hishtadlus, but 100% bitachon. Because whatever we output, whatever we do, is utterly dependent on Yad Hashem and the faith in him, as we see in the story of the Hashmonaim. We gave it our all. But still left to our own devices, there's no way we would have achieved success. Those great warriors, and I believe the Hashmonaim were great warriors, we said before. I believe the secularists are right that the Maccabi and the Hashmonaim were great warriors. We don't need to engage in historical whitewash and claim that they walked straight out of the base medrash with a bunch of rocks and spears in their hands without an organized strategy. Of course not, they were master strategists. They gave it their all. That's what you're supposed to do when you're fighting the war of Hashem, when you're pursuing the right project. 100% Hishtadlus, 100% Mesiris Nefesh, with 100% Bitachon, this is only going to work if Hashem does it. Don't you see this theology which informs the post-biblical era of Hanukkah taking shape here in this transition from night into day? And you could expand this historic perspective of moving in the post-biblical era where what was previously a God-initiated project now becomes a human-initiated project that we need to take the first step. When you begin to appreciate from a negative perspective, from a Zelu Umazeh perspective, what is going on not in the Jewish world, but what is going on in the secular world, in the Gentile world. Yavan, Greek culture, which glorifies man and departs from the prior belief which mankind had, that man is largely defenseless and at the mercy of metaphysical forces, even though the Avodah, even the pagans who did not believe in one omnipotent God Hashem, believed in a variety of forces which really are directing the affairs of man, be it the god of wind, be it the goddess of fertility, and man is at the mercy of these forces. Well, Yavan turns that on its head. And Western culture, down to the modern era of Renaissance and Enlightenment, further develops the perspective of human advancement where man is seen as the initiator. And even the religion of the Greeks was really only to service the needs of man as we know. So it is not a coincidence that just as Litzad HaKdusha, just as on the positive side, there is this transition going on from a God-initiated reality to a human and Mesiris Nefesh initiated reality in the post-biblical era. On the other side, that the Gentile world is undergoing its own parallel metamorphosis from a deity-centered perspective to a human-centered perspective. Right, and hence, Midrashim such as Seder Olam directly correlate the end of the biblical era to the ascension of Alexander the Great. The Seder Olam tells us when the final prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, died, that was when Alexander conquered Judea, the land of Israel. Right, this linkage is very important. The end of the biblical era, i.e. the beginning of the era of Torah Shebaal Peh, is at the same time that, i.e. Jewish wisdom, is the beginning of Greek wisdom. Right? That now there is this great cataclysmic shift in the world to a human-initiated reality, now that Hashem has retreated into the shadows of Hester Panim, you might say, with the end of the biblical era. And now there are two different perspectives how you see man's role. Do you believe, as the Greeks did, in man and the glory of man to the exclusion of anything else? Or do you believe, as the Jewish people do, that the glory of man and the initiative of man and the prowess of man is really only successful with the utter and total facilitation of Hashem, as the Hanukkah story is teaching us? Do you see a cohesive perspective now beyond little patched up Bertlach here and here? Are you beginning to sense that you are seeing the panorama, the breathtaking panorama in front of you, how all the pieces are coming together in terms of what's going on with the miracle of Hanukkah and the world at large at this time, and what the miracle of Hanukkah is modeling for us in a new type of miracle, which is precipitated by man? It is becoming exciting in the cohesiveness of this tapestry we are weaving. And I would suggest that if our perspective is true, that the yesod and the foundation of Hanukkah is really the splendid marriage between divine providence and human intervention, this ought to be said somewhere very directly. Presumably there is some Hanukkah passage that tells us directly the miracle of Hanukkah is all about seeing Hashem within the deeds of man, within the Mesiris Nefesh of the Hashmonaim, through his facilitation of Hashem and a splendid marriage between the two. And I argue it is right there in a text which we all have been saying for the last week. And that is, of course, the Al-Hanisim, when we read it with sensitivity. And let the words we all know sink into our sensitive ears. We say in the Al-Hanisim, read the words carefully. Don't fall into the trap of hype of loose liturgy read without absorbing the richness of the words we know so well and mining them for new insight. We say in the Al-Hanisim, Rav ta es rivam, Hashem, you fought their fight. Dan ta es dinam, Hashem, you judge their judgment. Nakamta es nikmasam, you avenge their cause of revenge. Now, this is a very strange expression. Hashem, you fought their fight. You judged their judgment. You avenged their revenge. You did their thing. It's a strange expression. You did their thing. You fought their fight. Well, now we understand exactly what the Al-Hanisim means. It was their fight. It was their revenge. And they actually did it. The Chasmonam fought the fight. But you fought the fight. 100% Hishtadlus and 100% Bitachen. There was a marriage here between God and man. Divine providence and human initiative. This is what Hanukkah is all about. This is modeling the miracles of the post-biblical era. It's right there in the text. Which makes the whole idea of Thanksgiving on Hanukkah, Hodah, all the more remarkable. It's no kunst to thank Hashem for biblical miracles such as Kriyas Yantzav. Yeah, of course it's Hashem's deed. There's no major kunst there. Thanksgiving. When we are achieving great things, as you and I are doing in our lives right now. To take success, Baruch Mizubagashmus, which we have in our life, and say, Hashem, I know I've done great things, but at the end of the day, it's you. That's a big deal. And that's the greatness of the Hodah of Hanukkah. You will see again and again that Thanksgiving, Hallel and Hodah, is the meta theme of Hanukkah. Just to lay out a few of the well-known sources, whether the Gemara citing earlier text, the Brisa in Megillas Tainus tells us the Hanukkah story concludes Kavam Bahalul Vahodah. They establish these days as days of praise of thanksgiving, whereas we say in the sister text of the Al-Hanisim, the Kavushmonas Yimei Hanukkah Eilu Vahodus L'Halashem Chagadol. They establish these days solely to be days of praise or thanksgiving, or whether as we say in the Haneiros Halalu regarding our Neiros Hanukkah, you know what the point of the Neiros are? Elo L'Rosam Bolvad. We seek to look at them Kedei L'Hodus L'Halal to give thanksgiving and praise. Again, we read all these expressions and we let them slip right off our tongue, perhaps without appreciating that this is unique. This depiction of Hanukkah, again and again, this pervasive depiction of Hanukkah as a day of thanksgiving, you don't find concerning any other Yantif. Of course, you will find in the small print, Hodah, Halav Hodah, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkos. But it is not the meta-focus. I challenge someone to find me any other yantif where it says the yantif is essentially Kedei L'Hodus L'Hallel. You only find this concerning Thanksgiving. Hanukkah is the Jewish Thanksgiving. We might not be whiffing the aroma of roasted turkey, cranberry sauce, and pumpkin pie, but rather a different aroma of frying lakis and baked sufganiyot. But it's our Thanksgiving. The Jewish Thanksgiving is Hanukkah, not any other holiday. And I ask you why. I mean, certainly the miracles of the other holidays, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Mammoth miracles, you would think they are certainly Thanksgiving worthy. So why is Hanukkah the Jewish Thanksgiving? Well, now the answer is becoming very apparent. Thanksgiving is powerful when we can justifiably take credit for our deeds and say it's ours. But then when we say, we know at the end of the day with our 100% bitachon, 100% established, I apologize, 100% human initiative, 100% bitachon, it's all you. We're only successful because of you. That's a kunst. That's thanksgiving, as underscored by the very word, hodah, thanksgiving. Appreciate that the root word of hodah, thanksgiving, is the word modah, which means to confess or admit. Confession or admission means to make a statement of subordinating oneself. I owe you. I owe you money in an admission. I did something wrong in a vidui, a confession. Well, apparently the same thing is going on a Thanksgiving. I am subordinating myself and saying, no, you really did something for me, despite the fact that I might think I am the one who achieved it. Right? Who does something very different than the American concept of a thank you, which oftentimes just becomes a perfunctory politeness, of course. When I told the cashier girl tonight, thank you for bagging my groceries and only messing up the credit card machine twice as I was pulling out my credit cards, and I said that perfunctory thank you simply because I have derech eretz and frankly because I wanted her out of my hair and to move on to my next responsibility this evening, right? So you get it, okay, you'll forgive me. I sometimes wonder certain people who seem to have a talent, right? The bags, the credit card machine, certain people have a talent at mess ups, but I'm sure she means well. But you understand that our thank yous are rather perfunctory. The real Jewish concept of a hodah is a profound statement. When I give you a hodah, I am saying, I need you. I might have thought I am independent. I am dependent. Hashem, I might have thought it's my deed. We might think in the Hanukkah story, we achieved victory because we were victorious. Don't allow the historical whitewashers with a false frumkrite recaricature the Maccabeim as a bunch of disoriented, frumpy people running around with rocks and spears. They were excellent strategists. They put together the best foot forward. Of course that's true. Don't whitewash history. They put forth the best a human could possibly. But at the end of the day, with all of their heroism, their courage, gumption, and grit, hodah, it's you, Hashem, alone. That is what Hanukkah is all about. And that is the richness, how we are living life through evermore. In the post-biblical era of Torah Shabbat power, we take the initiative. We take the initiative. It's our deeds, but ultimately, Hashem, it's you. Beautiful, resonant. Here we have right here the 100% bitachon, 100% hishtavus philosophy modeled by Hanukkah. And again, I think people are very resistant. I have found people are very resistant to this perspective that bitachon and hishtavus, faith and human initiation, need not be divvied up in the pipe. People are very resistant to it because it does not allow one to renege responsibility. You can't hide behind false piety and say, I am not going to work so hard in life because I have faith in it. Not quite the contrary. We put everything forward, total mesiras nefesh, as the Chashmonaim did, and yet it's Hashem, and that is the true power of Hodah Thanksgiving. Now the picture's coming together. And now that I have confidence in the overall tapestry of Hanukkah now unfurled in front of us, I could take a step back and ask myself, let's go back to basics now. Let's go back to the Chumash. Where do we find a source for this Hanukkah notion in the Chumash? Now let me explain the assumption of my question. Every dynamic in Judaism is rooted in the Chumash. The Chumash is all-inclusive. Any theme in Yiddishkeit, any yontif, even a yontif which came after the Chumash, is ultimately picking up on an idea which was sowed in the Chumash itself, which is why every single yontif, as I said, including the post-biblical Yom Tovim, are midrashically linked back to a persona in the Chumash, a given individual, be it he, be it she, or to a certain storyline in the Chumash, then I believe there's a persona who is the hero or heroine of Hanukkah and the Chumash, and hopefully we will see how that individual contains within them everything we have traced tonight. The marriage between human initiation and divine providence, the power of true Hodah, true thanksgiving in subordination to Hashem. Well, let's see. Let's see this come alive. This is going to be beautiful. This is going to be rewarding. I have no doubt that the figure in the Chumash, who is the patriarch, or rather the matriarch of Hanukkah, is Leah Imenu. Leah is certainly the figure of Hanukkah. And we'll trace a few clues to that effect. If Hanukkah is the holiday of Hodah, of Thanksgiving, well, we all know that Leah was the one in the Chumash, the only one in the Chumash, who gave Hodah, who gave thanksgiving to Hashem. When her fourth son, Yehuda, is born, Vatomer hapam odas Hashem, now I will thank Hashem, and hence she called the child Yehuda. The sages see this as the first Hodah the first Thanksgiving of humanity. Mara says, no one gave Hodah before Leia did so here. So Leia's the very initiator of the concept of Hodah. So I think you're beginning to appreciate that, yeah, it's very appropriate. Hanukkah, the Jewish Thanksgiving, is going to be linked back to Leia. And, of course, it will fall right into place, the fact that her son Yehuda, named after Hodah, well, that same name resurfaces in the primal mover of the Hanukkah story, Yehuda Maccabee. And of course, you'll note more broadly that Leia is the matriarch of the Hashmonam. The Hashmonam from, who are Kohanim from Levi, are descendants of Leia rather than Rachel. Very apparent that Leia is the address where we need to turn when we're thinking Hanukkah. Now, let's develop Leia a bit more. And we'll see how she embodies everything we've developed tonight. And I would actually like to share with you some of my excitement at the onset of this Leia journey. And I'll tell you why. Leia is arguably the most underappreciated of the Avos HaImos. For a very simple reason. When we study, when our tender hearts and soft, sensitive souls study the story of Rachel and Leah, who do we all have a bias towards? We all have a bias towards Rachel. I think I've never found someone vote in the other direction. We all feel so terrible for Rachel, the one who was Yaakov's true love, true Akaris HaBias. But then her role was largely usurped by Leah due to the machinations of Lavan. But yet Rachel and her heroism ensured that Leia would not be disgraced. And when we feel for Rachel here, Rachel gave it all up. And yet Rachel seems to come out the loser. She mothers relative to Leia very few children, and she dies in pain, barely reaching the promised land. We all feel for Leia. Our sympathy to the underdog, for Rachel, I apologize. Our sympathy to the underdog, and particularly the underdog who we believe should have been the winner. We all feel that sympathy for Rachel. And I think that blocks, impedes our ability to cultivate an emotional connection to Leia. Now you understand that in in-depth Torah learning and Torah experience, we need a deep emotional connection to all the Avos Nemos to be complete. Each one is a different persona, different flavor, touches us differently. And we are only complete when we bring each one to life, when we somehow avail that access route, that personal connection to them. And we will see in our development of Leia and Hanukkah tonight, Leia is going to come alive in all of her appeal, all of her glory, all of her grandeur. So let's do it. Beginning with this verse, this Hanukkah-esque verse, Hapam Odas Hashem, now I will thank Hashem. And the sage's interpretation that this was the first time man gave Hodah, man gave Thanksgiving. Now that is a perplexing statement. Do you really believe that no one before Leah thanked Hashem? Do you really believe Avram, Sarah, Yitzchak, Rivka never thanked Hashem? Of course they thanked Hashem. In fact, we have indication in the Gemara of Avram and Sarah teaching the world how to bench and say Birchas HaMazon and thank Hashem for food. So I refuse to settle on a superficial read. What does it mean that Leia was the first one to give Thanksgiving? Apparently there's something in the depth of Hodah Thanksgiving, as we've explained it this evening, which could only be appreciated by Leia, given who she is, the totality of her persona and soul. Let's think who Leia is and what's going on in the story here. As Leia's having children, and she eventually says, now I will thank Hashem. Leia, more than any other person, knows that she is receiving a gift from Hashem which she doesn't deserve at all. She's thinking back to the beginning of the story. Rachel was on to stardom. Rachel was the one destined to marry Yaakov. And Rachel was the beautiful one, as the Chumash tells us, Yafas Torah, Yafas Mara. Rachel had it all going for her. Leah, on the other hand, with her disheveled face, Ve'enei Leah Rakos, crying. Her swollen, her red swollen eyes crying, she's going to be set up with Esav. Right? She's beginning life seemingly as the loser, if we can be so blunt. There's no way she's going to be the matriarch of the Jewish people, the wife of Yaakov. But yet, somehow, some way, she is the primary mother of the Jewish people and becoming Yaakov's primary wife and mothering most of his children. And she knows very well that she's mothering these children with the tremendous and serious nefesh which every mother has in the labor and the labor pains, the child bearing, the child rearing. She knows as hard as she's working, and for all her seeming mesiris nefesh, Hashem, it's all you. Left to my own devices, there's no way I would be here. I was that loser with the red swollen eyes rather than the beautiful stardom moving on to Jewish celebrity Sister Rachel. Do you understand the idea of who does? We've explained that man's ability to confess to him, Hashem, it's all you, it's all you. This was so apparent to Leah in a way which no other human being could feel it with that depth. We all might pay lip service and in some loose sense believe that everything we achieve is really Hashem. But we still delude ourselves it's really me. The entire life story of Leah, she's mothering these children, attest to the fact it's really him. All your accomplishments are really him. Leah, you know this better than anyone else. You're going to be the first one to teach the world this truth and to come to learn in their own lives how all their supposed achievements are really from Hashem. That really, if we think back openly and honestly, we all have a Leah within us. We all have Red the Shevel's eyes, dwarfed by the supposed rivals, stars who see moving on to greatness rather than we. And yet we achieve, not in our own merit, not in our own virtue, but due to Hashem alone. And that is what Huda is all about. Beautiful, resonant. And you further appreciate, in light of this interpretation of Leah and Huda, you further appreciate Chazal's interpretation here. When Chazal say, why is she giving Hodah to Hashem specifically upon the birth of the fourth child? As she says here, Hapam, this time Hodah Hashem. So Chazal make a simple calculation. There are 12 Shvatim and 4 wives. So presumably each one is going to mother 3. And Leah says here, I've accepted Yoser Michalki more than our portion, and she gives Hodah. Now, we all gloss right over this, because that sounds good, getting more than your portion, so you give thanks. But what's the deeper meaning? What is the deeper correlation between taking more than your portion and Hodah? Well, now we understand that the whole idea of Hodah, as modeled by Leah, is the realization, the confession, the admission, Hashem, it's not me, it's you, it's not my merit, it's not my achievement. Even when I think it is, it's really from you. That was the entire life story of Leah. So her fourth child was literally the apex of this. I am giving birth to a child who, by any stretch of supposed merit, even once I've become a wife of Yaakov, there's no way I would have mothered. Yehuda is the apex of her realization that everything I'm achieving in life is you, along with my Mesiris Nefesh, along with the grit of my own efforts. This is Leah coming alive, and I think very moving Leah, and a Chanukah Dika Leah, in terms of the Yontif of Hutah, when we acknowledge that all our deeds and all our hard work is really him. Now, what do you think? What do you think of this expansion, that we're taking the story of Leah mothering children, and we're saying there's a lot more going on here than maternity? There's a relevant message to us all, men, women, and in any playground of life. Are we justified in taking this leap? Are we correct that the story of Leah, the damsel in distress, who then becomes the great matriarch, are we correct that Leah is really a symbol of the human condition, of the Jewish condition, when we achieve success by the grace of Hashem alone? Are we correct in making this leap? Well, here now, a Kabbalistic teaching in the Tikkuni Zohar cited by the Ramchal and many other sources in all of its glory, and how it affirms our entire Leah development. Kabbalah teaches that Rachel and Leah are not simply people and individuals, but embody two divine attributes, two hanhagos of Hashem. Rachel symbolizes Hashem's brachos b'midas hadin, we're taught. When Hashem blesses us, giving us what we deserve, k'sar v'onash, that is the Rachel hanhaga. The tzaddik behaves, receives a reward, that would be a Rachel type of phenomena. However, when we receive blessing beyond what we deserve, that teaches Kabbalah is a Leah phenomena. Now, how strange that our Chazal or Bali Kabbalah take two individuals in a story, Rachel and Leah, and see them as actually embodying these two attributes of Hashem, bracha with midas hadin, or bracha with grace without midas. Where are they coming from? Well, now you understand it exactly. Rachel, the beauty, Yaakov's choice by virtue of who she was and what she brought to the table. She symbolizes the innate virtue, the innate merit. Yaakov was marrying her because of who she was. She was truly, to use the modern day invitation expression, Bechiras Libo, the one he was choosing based on who she was. Beautiful in body, soul, everything which Yaakov must have saw in her. In this love affair, not of Hollywood dimensions, not of Shakespearean dimensions, but of the Kedusha dimensions of a Yaakov. So she symbolizes virtue, merit, which is deserved. Leah, on the other hand, Yaakov's reject. Yaakov in the Chumash clearly selected Rachel to the exclusion of Leah, it's clear in the Pasuk. She's the one who might, upon superficial glance, be rejected with her disheveled, red, swollen eyes and castigated to the heap, the ace of heap. But you know, Hashem says she's going to make it nonetheless. Why? Hashem says so. Hashem is going to ensure the least expected one, the one you think is the loser, is going to make it because that's what Hashem does. Shalom b'midas hadin. Leah is all about this hanhaga, this attribute of Hashem, merit or lack of merit of man. Hashem gives bracha. Blessing is not earned by man. Blessing is received by Hashem. You see how this Kabbalistic teaching comes together so beautifully in light of our development of Rachel and Leah. And this is what Hodah is all about. The realization, Hashem, I am not achieving. I am not getting what I deserve. It's all you. This is what Leah teaches us as we begin to see tonight. This is the great epiphany of Hanukkah, that when we think we've achieved, we really say, no, 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 it's you, Hashem. Well, perhaps you're still a bit skeptical. Perhaps you think our connections tonight are a little tenuous. Here we are taking the biblical story of Leah, a wife, a mother, and we are connecting it to the Hanukkah dynamics and the notion of how, along with divine providence, there is human initiation in this marriage between the two. Are we going to find this in the Leah story? Are we going to find that as much as Leah is receiving blessings from Hashem, becoming the matriarch of the Jewish people beyond her wildest dreams, she is not receiving these blessings passively, but sitting back and twiddling her thumbs on Chalila reneging responsibility. She's pursuing it with gumption and gut. Well, it's right there in the text in a very troubling exchange. How, as Leah is becoming more and more of a presence in the Yaakov family, mothering more and more children, she asserts herself very in a story which disturbs us. And let not our personal sensitivities and trouble with a story bar us from accessing the rich imagery in the story. And that is, of course, I'm referring to the story of when her son Reuven brings back the dudam, brings back the jasmine flowers, which were believed to be fertility-inducing. And Rachel turns and says, poor Rachel, pitifully asks, Please give me those Dutan. And what does Leia say in those haunting words, in those troubling words? Rachel says, is it enough that you've taken my husband, that you are still Yaakov's main love, I am second fiddle? Is that not enough that now you want to take my Dudam flowers too? I'm not going to give up these Dudam flowers without some stiff negotiations. And we all read it and we're troubled. Let's be honest, we think of a heartlessness on Leia's part. Poor Rachel. But don't you understand the power of this narrative? As much as we might say, Leia, a little sense of proportion. Left to your own devices, you'd be on the outs. You wouldn't be a mother here at all. What do you mean Rachel's taking away your husband? Yaakov is her husband. You're lucky that you even crossed the threshold of Yaakov's tent. But you know, Leia doesn't see it this way. As much as she is the aim of Hodah, who says, Hashem, I am here as a mother of the Jewish people because of you alone. She owns that blessing of as a mother of the Jewish people. It's me. It's my destiny. And I am going to pursue it and not allow anyone to deny it from me. And therefore, as much as it's a blessing from Hashem that I didn't deserve to be mother of the Jewish people, it's me, it's my destiny, I will not play second fiddle, and I refuse to be the second tier wife in this house, and I am not going to allow Rachel to snatch my husband and snatch the fertility herbs without being recognized on equal negotiating footing. Powerful, powerful. Allow that to sink in. Hishtadlus along with Hodan Bitachan. And now appreciate the continuation of the narrative. Leia borders her Dudam flowers to spend the night with Yaakov. And what does she do? As the narrative continues. Vatetse Leia likroso. Leia leaves her tent to greet Yaakov. Vatomer Eli Tova, you're joining me tonight. The sages see the scene as provocative. Breaking all stereotypes of the supposedly passive wife who waits to be called upon. Leia leaves the tent and invites Yaakov in and takes the initiative. The sages, Chazal and Gemara, are enamored by this. Sages go so much as to say they midrashically envision here Leia displaying allure and luring and stimulating Yaakov to her. With provocation that would surprise you. Yatsa Leia Mikuteshes Kazona and lures him to his tent. Certainly appreciating that in the context of marital intimacy, full engagement of both spouses is the goal. In all aspects of this cherished, precious relationship, including the physical. But she takes the initiative and lures him to the tent and displays great passion, to use the words of the Medrash, lo hinicho so lirchos raglo v'yadav. She didn't even allow him to wash his hands or feet, but immediately took him to the tent. And the sages say, from here we learn that a woman is supposed to display initiative in the relationship. Well, do you not see so clearly that Rachel in her role as mother and wife of the Jewish people is not passive at all? Yes, she's only here because of Hashem put her here and she did not deserve to be here. But now that it's my lot, I'm going to pursue it till the very end and display provocative sort of initiation. Break any glass ceilings. Total hishtadlus along with total bitachon. Leia is the matriarch of this Hanukkah fusion. Well, perhaps you are a bit skeptical Rabbi Sklar is romanticizing tonight, is weaving a fantastical midrashic development for us tonight, connecting a marital dynamic, Leia Yaakov, to the story of Hanukkah. It's the year of Torah Shabbat Peh, when we must achieve, when human initiation meets divine providence. but see how it is right in the text, in the Midrashim, regarding the Leah's initiation, the link to Torah Sheval Peh and the story of Chanukah. Because this is a beauty. Let's trace this pattern. Because the Gemara teaches us that from the story of Leah we learn that a wife who takes the initiative to stimulate her husband to intimacy will merit children who have the trait of Bina, extrapolation. Because the child born from this union that night when Leah lured Yaakov to her tent, the child was Yisachar, who is the tribe of Bina, Ubnei Yisachar Yodei Bina. They became the Dayanim, they became the Halach Decisors, who used extrapolation, the Torah Sheval Peh judgment, of taking Hashem's Torah Shebeksav and deriving from it, deducing from it new insights and new halachic conclusions. Now what a strange Gemara, what a strange link that full feminine engagement yields particularly children who are mechadshim in Torah, children with bina. But now you're saying the attribution is not loose at all. Don't you get it? We are Hashem's wife. And yet we refuse to be passive. A passive wife. Hashem will receive your Torah. But we say we're going to be fully engaged in this Torah union. We're going to take your Torah and we're going to do great things. We're going to develop from it in Torah Sheval Peh. We're going to give forth full output. This is the dynamic, fully engaged partner who Hashem wants, the dynamic partner that deep down every husband wants. So don't you see splendidly in this Gemara how the initiation of Leah yields a child like Yisachar, a child of Torah Sheval Peh, a child of Bina? Which is what Chanukah is all about in the post-biblical era, the notion that we are going to be fully engaged members of this relationship now. We are going to take initiatives in Avodas Hashem. And that's not all. Trace a second clue in this Gemara, linking Torah Sheval Peh decisions to dynamic wifely initiative. Because you notice that it harps specifically on the trait of Bina. Yisachar, the child of this relationship, has Bina. Bina, extrapolation, we know is a feminine trait. Bina yiserinit l'lanashim, for a very simple reason. Because extrapolation means you're taking something pre-existent and developing it further, which is exactly what the feminine role is, both biologically in taking the seed and developing it, conceiving and cultivating from it something so much more valuable and something so much more beautiful, which is an actually living creature. But beyond biology, as our sources tell us, the role of woman is to take male ideas, the spark of male imagination, and make reality out of his loose, hazy dreams with her pragmatism and her capabilities as a nurturer, as an azer connector. So you understand that Bina, the Midah of woman, and dynamic, engaged womanhood, as epitomized by Leah, is yielding the children, the Yisachars, who in Torah Sheval Peh are that engaged wife of Hashem who refuse to be passive but are fully engaged partners in our Jewish output and our human output, contributing with Hashem. Don't you see how Chanukah, post-biblical era, connectivity between us and Hashem is all there in the Leah story, along with Leah's Hodah, her dynamic initiative. This is what Chanukah is all about. The pieces are coming together. Our connections tonight, though creative, once we see it and could own it, it's all right there. And let's take this two more steps further. We will be well rewarded. This is a beauty. This is amazing. Because I know I still have my skeptics who believe that it is wholly fantastical the way I've taken a Leah dynamic here, Leah vis-a-vis her husband and becoming a mother of the Jewish people. And in Leah, I really see all of us on Chanukah in the post-biblical period when we are being most nefesh and doing great things as fully engaged partners. I know you might still find this fantastical. You are going to ask me, you want to see a direct connection. You want to see Leah and her son of Bina, of initiative, Yisachar, you want to see him directly in the Chanukah story to draw this link and settle the shiur for tonight. And you don't have to work very hard at all. I'm sure you've been listening to the Kriyas HaTorah over the course of this week of Chanukah. And you have heard the precursor story to Chanukah is the Chanukas HaMishkan, when the Mishkan was inaugurated in a Hanukkah, in an induction ceremony, celebrated by the Karbanos of the Nesiim, the princes of the various tribes who all brought offerings and the precursor to the Hanukkah which we are celebrating. Well, I'm sure you recall Rashi's commentary that Rashi says, which tribe was it which hatched the idea of Chanukah's HaMishkan? Which hatched the idea that all the tribes ought to bring an offering and thereby have a Chanukah of the Mishkan? It was the tribe of Yisachar, says Rashi. Well, don't you see that teaching is no coincidence at all? The fact that the tribe of Yisachar is the tribe which initiates Hanukkah, and moreover is the tribe of initiation in general, they spark new ideas which Hashem never told them. Let's bring offerings. Let's make a Hanukkah. It's Yisachar who does that. Yisachar who embodies the traits of his mother Leah. The notion of being a fully engaged partner. That is Yisachar. That is what Hanukkah is all about. And the truth is, we are not the only ones to link the tribe of Yisachar's role in initiation of Chanukah of the Mishkan to his trait of Bina as bequeathed by Leah. Rashi explicitly does this for us. Rashi, in the story of the Chanukah's HaMishkan, tells us, why was it that the tribe of Yisachar merited a special coveted, the coveted number two spot in the Chanukah's HaMishkan right after the tribe of Yehuda on the second day of the Chanukah's HaMishkan, the tribe of Yehuda sacrificed? Says Rashi, two reasons. Number one, because they possess the trait of Bina. Number two, they are special because they were the ones who came up with the whole idea to donate towards the Mishkan. Rashi is linking two virtues of Yisachar, their trait of Bina extrapolation and their trait of being initiators of Chanukah's HaMishkan. Understand that these two traits of Yisachar are integrally linked. It is their trait of Bina as inherited from Leah, their ability to say, we will not be passive. We will be, so to speak, fully engaged partners, the fully dynamic femininity, Bina. That is what empowers them. It is that Kayach HaChiddush which empowers them to initiate new ideas for which they were never commanded for by Hashem, such as the Chanukah's HaMishkan. And this Yisachar Leah story now serves as the precursor story to Hanukkah, because this is what Hanukkah is all about. Human initiative, along with utter hodah to Hashem. Well, let's settle tonight's shir with the realization that you are singing tonight's shir tonight in your Mosor. It's right there. And this will settle our shir tonight. We sing in Mosor, and this will truly end tonight's shir. Who was it who established the Hanukkah of the Hashmonaim? B'nei Vina, sons of Bina, sons of extrapolation. The Chazal and the Chashmonaim who established Hanukkah are called B'nei Bina, sons of extrapolation. Yimei Shmona Kavushir Anan, and they established 8 days of Hanukkah. Why are we so fixated on the word Bina, extrapolation in Hanukkah? Does the word Bina mean anything to you now? Well, of course. Bina is the Hanukkah trait. Bina is the Leah Yisachar trait of an ability to initiate, to be a fully dynamic, a dynamically engaged partner, to be that wife of Hashem, to be that proactive, display proactive femininity, which to a Klal Yisrael vis-a-vis Hashem means we will not remain passive, but we will engage with Chiddush, and we will do great things all in service of Hashem, and thereby have a truly splendid marriage between divine providence and human intervention. Soak in the wonder. Let it seep into you how when we open our eyes beyond the myopic to the expansive, breathtaking view and are willing to trace dots and thereby create pictures in ways which we would never have anticipated from a myopic linear view. See how the beautiful picture comes together. So much came together tonight. Beautiful understanding of Hanukkah in terms of how we live our lives. Total hashtadlus, total bitachon. A beautiful understanding of hodah means. What hodah means. And total acknowledgement for all I achieve, it's you, you, you. How we took the neglected mother Leah, who has been so neglected in our emotional consciousness, and we brought her alive in a way which is appealing and inspiring, which we all relate to in life, when we all felt we were proverbial losers lagging behind those moving on to stardom. And yet Hashem made it all happen to us, and hence we give hodah to Hashem and see it's all from Him. Where would we be without Him? How we brought forth the idea of Bina, the B'nai Bina of Hanukkah, and we showed that the whole notion of Torah Sheba'al Peh in this post-biblical era, the opportunity for us to truly leave our mark and make contributions in a fully engaged partnership with Hashem. It's all here. It's all connected in the splendid harmony, in the splendid integration of Torah dynamics, in this case, Hanukkah. This was my pleasure. This was my Freilich in Hanukkah. Thank you all for sharing in this creative journey with me tonight, and please share with me your feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you, Murray. I hope you enjoy.
I feel particularly good.